Under the sweet autumnal sun, the war indeed has blighted this area. That is Fredericksburg. How about Middle Tennessee? Middle Tennessee was one of the show places of the antebellum South, a very rich agricultural area. A northern cavalryman riding in April 1863 anticipated the language Fremantle would use to describe Sperryville 2 months later. He wrote, "It's really sad to see this beautiful country here so ruined. There are no fences left at all. There's no corn and hay for the cattle and horses. But then there are no horses left anyhow, and the planters have no food for themselves." And I'll just give one more of these quotations. This is from the Valley of the Red River in Louisiana, which presented an equally dreary picture in mid-1864. This is a colonel named George W. Guess of the 31st Texas Cavalry, who proclaimed, quote, "Not only every vestige of food in this whole country has been destroyed, but nearly every town and every house has been burned." Innumerable bits of testimony such as these, I think, indicate the degree to which the war laid an extremely heavy hand on the Confederate States, that part of the South that joined the Confederacy. Two numbers will give a sense of the economic cost of the war. Between 1860 and 1870, Northern wealth increased by 50%. During that same decade, Southern wealth decreased by 60%. So just an enormous crossing of those lines and an undoubted, unbelievably high price that the Confederacy paid in a material sense for its experiment in rebellion. All right, what about the question of why the war ended as it did? Let's move to a brief consideration of that. Any number of explanations have been put forward over the years about why the United States was the victor, why the Confederacy failed. Some historians have insisted that the Confederates never really became nationalists. They never had a sense of national striving. They remained too wedded to their notions of state rights and individual freedoms. They wouldn't turn loose of those in an effort to win their independence. And certainly there are some instances of state rights getting in the way, and many white Southerners believed that the war had been destructive to their state rights. They complained about it. They leveled blasts against the Davis government, as we've seen, including Alexander Stevens, the vice president of the Confederacy. But I don't think the state rights notion holds up under scrutiny, because in fact, the Confederacy went much farther down the road toward a powerful central government than the United States did during the Civil War. The Confederate people put up with conscription before the North did. They put up with attacks in kind. They put up with impressment. They put up with a range of intrusions from the central government, absolutely unprecedented in United States history. And in the end, of course, they even debated the question of putting slaves into their military if that were necessary to win the war. In fact, they gave up almost all of their pre-war notions about state and individual rights that had to be protected against the central government in the course of their war to achieve independence. Leaders in the Confederate cause who pushed for this national approach were, of course, Jefferson Davis, who did so relentlessly, and Robert E. Lee, who called for the subordinating of every other interest to the national cause. So I don't think state rights is really what caused the Confederacy to fail. Now, other historians have argued quite persuasively that a range of internal divisions within the Confederacy undid society and made the Confederacy reach a point where, although there were still men in the armies, the folks back home had become so disaffected that they weren't willing to support the effort anymore. And they point to yeomen who believed it was a rich man's war and a poor man's fight. They point to non-slaveholders who said that the slaveholders were simply trying to have their property made safe, and there was really nothing in the war for the non-slaveholders. They argue that women lost heart well before the military balance had shifted decisively, that many women believed God had deserted them, and the defeats on the battlefield proved that. That other women argued that their patriarchal compact, where they agreed to behave a certain way and men had certain obligations, one of which was to protect families and women, men had failed in that part of their obligation, and therefore all bets were off, and this struggle for the Confederacy lost meaning for many of these women. There's some truth to all of these, in fact, a good deal of truth to all of these. There's tremendous disaffection in the Confederacy. There's an enormous amount of class tension at one time or another in the Confederacy. But so is there class tension and disaffection in the North, and I submit in every other society in the midst of a crisis like this. If all you do is focus on these tensions, I think it tends to obscure the larger picture.